Yep, 419. Everyone was busy on tax day. 418 AMA did not happen. I sadly sent money to Uncle Sam last night. I'm sure
always sad when you got to do that.
Yeah, I was back and forth too. I'm like, should I pay late and just pay the penalty? Or I did the math and I'm like, nope, I have other outlets where I can get money cheaper. But it was a decision to be made. It's not super expensive. I mean, basically, yeah. I could have paid a couple months late and it would only cost me like a couple hundred bucks in late fees. And it's like, hell, throw that money into HBD.
Yeah.
HBD savings.
Yeah, we were just talking a little bit pre-show about doing the wrapped Bitcoin loans and then throwing the capital that you get, the DAI, into HBD savings. And whenever I write a post about that, people love it. Like just the whole idea of the wrapped Bitcoin loans, you know, because I think a lot of people resonate with having Bitcoin, you know, sitting in a wallet, and what do you do with it and what can you do with it to generate some yield or just any sort of return. And I think one of my new favorite things to do is throw it into wrapped Bitcoin, take a DAI loan against it, convert the DAI to HBD and just save that HBD and make your 20%.
Indeed. I love all the posts, threads, and even tweets I've been seeing lately about like joking about HBD being a Ponzi scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when scam?
When scam?
When Ponzi blow up?
Right. Well, yeah, that's like the huge question is, and a lot of people wrote posts about that from that, that tweet kind of went viral from this one random dude who basically called HBD a scam. And then obviously everyone jumped in and was talking about HBD and why it isn't a scam. But a lot of great posts were written talking about it and kind of describing the different mechanics behind it. Because if you look at HBD, like it has a lot of very similar mechanisms and, you know, broad-based ideas to like Luna and UST, but there's some very like fundamental differences that basically prevent or hopefully prevent a death spiral in the way that, you know, Luna and UST blew up. And I think one of the big things going for us is that HBD is so small that we're kind of like in this small echo chamber and we can keep testing and testing, and we actually don't want it to get adopted too quickly. Like it's nice that it can scale up slowly. And the fact that only so much HBD can basically get, you know, like it, I think if a bunch of whales came in right now, and let's just say that there was like $100 million in capital that wanted to flow into HBD, it would take a very long time for them to acquire that HBD, like an insane amount of time. And they would be driving up the Hive price. They'd be driving up the price of HBD because it's not hard pegged. And, you know, in my opinion, and we kind of saw that, like that one guy who bought like 1.2 million HBD or something, he drove up the price of both Hive and HBD in the process of getting just $1 million worth of HBD. So the fact that we're not hard pegged is a big deal. Then you have other things like the haircut rule, which, you know, Dials wrote a great post about that. Where he essentially was talking about how, you know, and the debt limit was recently increased. But basically, once we reach 20% in terms of the HBD market cap versus the Hive market cap, the amount of HBD that gets printed for auth rewards starts to decrease. So that's called the haircut rule. And then at 30%, it completely stops minting. Also at 30%, HBD conversions are rejected. So that basically means like if people are trying to convert Hive to HBD, the blockchain literally won't let them. It'll let you try to put a conversion through and it'll fail. So there's all these different mechanisms that kind of go into place that can prevent that, you know, that market cap from getting out of hand. Because if you really think about it, HBD is like a debt tool, right? It's debt against the Hive market cap. If that debt grows too large, then that's where you can get a death spiral situation because, you know, bad debt is bad debt. But if you can keep the economy healthy, keep the debt low and kind of have like this good circular momentum, then I think HBD could grow really large over a long period of time. I don't see it growing really large in short bursts. So, you know, Dials always puts up really cool charts showing all sorts of data about HBD. And one of the things he put up was talking about the total HBD supply and also talking about how much HBD is in savings. And you can see the HBD in savings is just steadily increasing over time. I forgot what we're at now, like 7 million or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. And the amount of HBD in circulation hasn't really increased a whole lot. You know, we're seeing this economy very slowly grow. And I think that's really bullish. I know that one, like just kind of addressing like concerns, because I feel like that's like the whole story right now. But like one big concern is like, what happens if the witnesses decide that they want to remove or decrease that 20% interest? It'll potentially crash the HBD price because people won't want to save it anymore. And then it'll also, you know, that uncertainty is like what's keeping a lot of investors out. That's probably like in my opinion, I'm not really worried about like a death spiral on HBD just because of how small it is right now. You know, and that can be reevaluated as it gets bigger and bigger and grows in market cap. But I think one of the big concerns that I have and other people might have is, you know, what is the clarity on 20% interest? And, you know, there's a few points there. I think witnesses could make statements about what their beliefs are. And, you know, if those beliefs were to change, then I think they should keep the community updated on what they believe and why. And then, you know, on top of that, I think as HBD spreads out and you're seeing a lot more unique accounts staking HBD into savings, and you're also seeing just more HBD in each of those accounts, as people get that vested interest in HBD, in that 20% APR, they're going to start using their Hive power to vote for witnesses that maintain that APR that they want. So, you know, I think over time, as that 20% APR matures and more people start getting it into savings, I think that risk of witnesses potentially like saying, you know, we're going to remove, because the way it works is like witnesses dictate what that APR is. So if witnesses start signaling that they want the APR to be 10%, but there's other witnesses that are saying that they'll do 20%, maybe you'll see a big governance switch on Hive. And I think that starts to get really interesting from a game theory perspective, especially in terms of owning Hive. In my opinion, if you imagine, let's say that like in this scenario, we're talking about $100 million or just a lot of money coming into HBD. Let's say that a lot of money comes into HBD. You got, you know, 20, 30, 40, $50 million worth of HBD. And, you know, a coalition of whales are coming in and staking all this HBD. If there starts to, if like some sort of witness battle comes to play out where some are signaling 20%, some are not, you could see like a really interesting scenario take place where these whales who have a ton of HBD actually start to buy up a bunch of Hive power and stake it and vote for witnesses that are willing to signal 20% APR. So you get some really cool like game theory mechanics behind this economy that I just don't think are present on something like a Luna UST. So to me, that all that stuff is really fascinating. And I think the discussions around like people thinking, is HBD a scam? You know, what are the downsides of 20% APR? All sorts of stuff like that, I think is like really healthy and good discussion. So I've been like lurking in that discussion, both on Twitter and on Hive directly. But I know you've been staking a lot of HBD. So what do you think of the potential downsides?
I mean, the funny part is my like simplistic point of view in terms of the risk profile is, you know, what you originally said about we're this small ecosystem. And that's kind of the saving grace for me on like why I'm comfortable with it. Cause I'm like, you know what? Hive's been this small ecosystem for, you know, since I've been involved, which is creeping up on 7 years, which is kind of crazy that I'm not crypto rich. But anyway, it's been this slow growth under the radar. You know, the win with that is, yeah, it creates less volatility. And, you know, you've given the examples about, you know, not only the one user that, you know, acquired a million HBD and staked it, but also, you know, what would happen if whatever, you know, $100 million tried to come into the system and things like that. So honestly, I kind of left it at that for myself. And then if we get to a point where Hive starts hitting any kind of like critical mass or just any kind of, you know, going viral, so to speak, I'll basically reevaluate there. As far as what you're talking about with the witnesses and whatnot, I mean, that's something that, you know, it's good to think about, but it's so far out of my control outside of, you know, voting on witnesses that I'm not really worried about it. If at some point I see, you know, chatter or desire for change and whatnot, then I can, again, reevaluate then and decide if I want to, you know, pull out of savings or not, because at least with HBD savings, you know, you can get out a lot quicker than, you know, the equivalent of powering down Hive. So that is kind of how I look at it. More of a just broad base and adjust as needed.
I'm definitely of the opinion that HBD is like probably one of the safest stable coins out there for a lot of different reasons, but you know, age, history, the community behind this blockchain, the size of HBD, and you know, the death spiral scenario on Luna UST was because of how big it got and how out of hand it got. Yep. And then also the mechanisms that were in place that didn't control the debt in terms of UST. And if you know, I would love to see, and maybe honestly, maybe someone could throw this into GPT or something to run simulations, because I've been using GPT to run like simulations and stuff, and it's kind of fun to do. But you know, one thing I think that is kind of interesting is like, if you were to apply HBD mechanics to the entire scenario that was, you know, Luna UST and its downfall, would it have failed? Like at, you know, just imagine like HBD and Hive being at the market caps of Luna and UST, having the inflows, outflows that it had, the platforms that it had, and all sorts of stuff like that, would it have failed? I think that's a really interesting scenario to game out. I'm pretty bullish on Hive in terms of the economy that's formed around HPD. I think it's really interesting. I think it's something that Hive has desperately needed for a long time, because we have like the social aspect down, you know, and it's not perfect, but in terms of social aspect and community and everything, I don't think Hive is really rivaled by anything. But, you know, what's, oh, and we've got, you know, dApps and stuff. You got Splinterlands, Leo, ThreeSpeak, other dApps that are building and teams that aren't going to go anywhere. So, you know, you combine all of that with now potentially like a really attractive economy in terms of having the stablecoin. And I think that could draw a lot of people in, and it could be that kind of missing puzzle piece that I think Hive needed. I know a lot of people talk about marketing, and marketing, in my opinion, I've always talked about marketing has to be done from the dApp perspective. Like Leo's incentive is to grow our monthly active users, which means growing the monthly active users of Hive. Hive's incentive is to create good base layer economics and infrastructure that we can just build on as dApps. So I think that vision has never been more clear, at least from my perspective. I think for other people on Hive as well.
The Hive blockchain has always been, you know, this mystery in terms of like, you know, why is it not more popular? Why is the price not higher? Because as far as functionality, it kind of has always covered all bases for the most part. I mean, yeah, it really hasn't been stress tested in terms of, you know, what happens if activity 10x's and, you know, resource credits and all that. But it is still a mystery, because a lot of these chains that get popular are like, you know, to do the things that Hive already does in terms of whether it's feeless transactions or fast transaction times. Definitely makes it interesting.
Yeah, let me answer this question about the ad revenue, because we were talking about monthly active users and growing Leo. So yeah, I think Tutonium, if you've caught some of the recent posts and threads and AMAs, we talked about ad revenue and what is going on with that front. The Alpha UI is live, and we announced, I think it was not last AMA, but the AMA before that, the official release date of the new UI. So that is the Alpha UI being moved to the production LeoFinance.io, and LeoFinance.io getting replaced. That is going to take place on May 1st. We've talked about, you know, what our plans are with the whole ad protocol. We've done an entire overhaul of Leo ads and how they work. And that is down to everything from, you know, how they're displayed, who our ad partners are, and then also, you know, a lot of tweaks in terms of a lot of low hanging fruit that we saw that could potentially increase the ad revenue a lot. And the ad revenue has already increased a lot because of Threads. Because with Threads, the amazing thing is that we're getting a lot more page views. We're getting a lot more time on site, a lot more engagement, a lot more clicks on ads. I think it's just a lot more engaging in general. So Threads have already done a great service for our ad revenue protocol. The next big step is like this big overhaul that I've talked about a few times. Included in that is a whole backend overhaul. And that backend that the team built, this smart contract where ad partners can pay like Bitcoin or, you know, crypto directly to that contract, the contract will convert it into Leo. So it'll buy it on, you know, wrapped Leo or BLeo or PLeo, and then it'll unwrap it. And then from there, it can either be burned by the smart contract or it can basically be added to Leo Power. So what that means is like, if you have 100,000 Leo Power every year, the ad revenue, depending on how much the ad revenue is, like, let's just say, for example, it's like 10%, right? So you have 100,000 Leo Power. Let's just assume, just to keep all the other variables equal, you're not doing anything with upvoting, or you're not creating content, you're not upvoting anything. So your 100,000 is just going to be 100,000 a year later. With the ad revenue in place, your 100,000 Leo Power would be 110,000 Leo Power after a year, if the ad revenue was equal to 10% of all Leo Power staked. A lot of interesting math that goes behind that. But if you read that post, you can see all the math that goes in there and how that protocol will work in terms of the smart contract. But that is most likely, you know, after, you know, pinging a lot of different community members and talking to everybody, that's kind of what the team has decided in terms of which smart contract route to take. Whether it's burn or do the Leo Power increases. So I think we are going to head towards that Leo Power route. And it's like a huge incentive to hold Leo Power, right? Like, as an active member of the platform, you are basically getting, you're basically earning that ad revenue, and you're earning it as more Leo Power. So I think it's really interesting. And it will create a huge amount of buying pressure on Leo every single month, because obviously that smart contract has to keep buying Leo with all that ad revenue that's flowing in. So Tutonium, if you've caught any of the recent content, we've talked about that a lot. Really, the driving focus of everything right now is getting to production for the new UI. So once we're in production, that's when all these other protocols will get released. But like I said, the smart contract's already done for that. We started working on it about a year ago, right after I wrote that post. So the whole back end is done. Really what needs to be done now is get the front end in place and get this new Leo Ads design that we have in place, which will look a lot like Twitter. I've talked about that too, but ads are going to be like inline and native. So like the goal is like, you don't really know that you're looking at an ad until you've made it to like the bottom of the ad and it says promoted. So it just kind of looks like another piece of content, which should increase clicks, should increase, you know, general engagement with ads and all sorts of stuff like that. So kind of copying Twitter on that front, which a few years ago, Twitter was making tons of money from ad revenue, like hand over fist. And I think under Elon, it's going to start making, you know, hand over fist again when they kind of get the platform back to where it should be. So we're kind of following that model, but instead we're Web3-ifying it with a smart contract that will basically increase Leo power consistently. There's definitely going to be a lot of details that go into that and a lot of posts that need to come out to explain how it all works. But essentially envision that you'll go to your wallet UI, which we just released last Friday, and you'll be able to see your Leo power and the current APR calculated of what the ad revenue generates. So a lot of interesting stuff on that front.
I know, like, obviously it's supposed to be like a distribution of ad revenue, but is there still going to be a burn in terms of like the bigger picture overhaul? When you have like the ad marketplace and everything, is that going to be a combination of distributing revenue out to LP holders and burns as well, or one or the other? Or
so the way the ad revenue works is that it's basically fully decentralized, right? So when a company or a person wants to advertise on leofinance.io, this new ad protocol will let them submit ads. Like if you've ever used Facebook ads, it looks a lot like this, but decentralized, where there's like the approval process. And this is where things kind of start to get pretty cool because of what we built with polls. A lot of the stuff we're doing, and we've been doing a lot with the weekly author stuff with the polls, which I'll also talk about. But a lot of stuff that we're doing is coming back around to polls, which allow for voting with your Hive account. And you can vote on different things. So one thing that's going to happen is these ads are like fully decentralized, and there's no like real team control that comes into play. So people will like people or companies, like if you're, let's say you're Splinterlands and you want to advertise on leofinance.io, or you're like Coinzilla and you want to advertise on leofinance.io, or anybody, or even just your Scaredy Cat's Guide to Bitcoin. Let's say that you want to advertise that on leofinance.io. You'll go to the specific page on this UI and you'll be able to submit an ad. I'm sure most of you know what it looks like on like Facebook or Twitter, but you basically submit an ad in a certain format. And then from there, a poll gets launched and the community votes whether or not to approve that ad. You know, if someone launches an ad that's like maybe something that's detrimental to the user experience or website or inappropriate in some sort of way, it's up to the community to not vote for that poll or vote, like basically to vote yes or no and to vote no if they don't want it. Or if they think the ad is good and stuff like that, they vote yes and the ad gets approved. And then from there, the ad starts getting rotated in on the ad rotation, which will look, and like I said, it looks a lot like Twitter, where those ads are natively in line with other threads. And it just kind of looks native to the experience, but it says promoted at the bottom. So basically you have this whole process. A company or a person comes in, they submit an ad, that ad gets approved from a decentralized poll on Leo Threads. Once it's approved, then the person at the beginning set like a budget and stuff for that ad. Like say they wanted to run the ad for 30 days and they wanted to pay $10 a day, right? So they pay, you know, in HBD or Bitcoin or Hive or whatever. They pay for that. Once it gets approved, then the smart contract holds all the money basically in escrow. Once that ad is completed, then that entire budget can be used to buy Leo, and then it goes to Leo power holders. And this is all done from smart contracts. It's all automated, and there's no there's essentially like no middleman in this whole scenario. The community is essentially the middleman, where they're saying, okay, we want this ad or we don't want this ad, and they have to approve or disapprove it. I think that's where things kind of get really interesting on the ad front, is like this whole new idea behind Web3 ads and how they work. So to answer your question directly, there's no ad burn in that scenario. That ad revenue comes in as the form of like Bitcoin, for example, by the smart contract, that Bitcoin is converted into Leo, or that Leo is then powered up as Leo power. And it's powered up into all the accounts of people who have Leo power already. So it basically just increases Leo power balances. So kind of cool how that all works. But yeah, once it's, I mean, it sounds like super complicated if you try to dive into the weeds of it, but in reality, it's like very simple. Like ad revenue comes in, Leo power balances go up. that's like the simplistic way that it works. But yeah, we were kind of skipping over the whole token burn thing. I think there's a lot more value in going for the like abundant economy type of vision. And I think when you combine this with the changes that are coming also to Leo.voter and Leo.bounties and all that stuff, which we'll talk about closer to May 1st, there's a lot of interesting tokenomic things that can happen on the back end in terms of buying pressure for Leo.
I mean, obviously the distribution of the Leo is cool and yeah, it goes to Leo Power, so technically it's powered up, but you always have the aspect of people powering down and selling, you know, those earnings, so to speak, which, you know, can be looked at as, you know, supply side force, but at the same time, burning doesn't guarantee that you change that balance, so to speak, in terms of creating more buy side. And in the end, you know, people need to sell Leo, they're going to sell Leo. If people, you know, want to build their stakes, they're going to build their stakes. Can't really kind of control that, but that incentive to hold more Leo Power you hold, you know, more piece of the revenue you get is an incentive, I think, on the plus side. And like you said, it kind of creates that more so abundance environment and mentality, which in the end is the vibe you want in anything. So cool stuff.
So I've got a couple, a lot of good stuff happening. So News to Threads is now up and running. This is something that he was working on, which is really, really cool. So there's a News to Threads channel and you can basically go to it. And I think he's saying that it's up and running and we've been kind of testing it and there's a group of people using it. So one thing we're talking about, and I think we're probably going to do this, is that anyone above the line role, which is if you have 15,000 Leo Power or more and you have that role on Discord, can use that bot. And essentially what the bot does is you basically take an article link. Like let's say you find a link on CoinDesk about Bitcoin. You take that link, you drop it in the News to Threads channel, and then you use the right hashtag for it. So there's 10 different hashtags that you can use, like business, sports, crypto, finance, and other ones. So let's say you find one about Bitcoin. So you drop the link, you use hashtag crypto to like inform the News to Threads bot that's the designation that it has. The bot basically interacts with ChatGPT and it tells ChatGPT, hey, read this article and give me the three top synopsis points of this article and turn it into a Leo thread with three threads in it. And then in the fourth thread, include a link back to the original CoinDesk article if someone wants to read the whole article. So it kind of like cliff notes the article and then gives you the link so you can go back to it. It's really cool because anyone with 15,000 Leo power or more we'll be able to like, if you find a really interesting crypto article, you just take the link, drop it in there, tell the bot to do its thing, and then it'll show up on Threads. I think what's awesome about this is that it creates like this whole information stream for Threads in terms of like getting really high quality information in a timely manner, like to Threads. And that's kind of like the whole idea behind Threads is, you know, engagement is obviously number one. But another one is like getting really good pieces of information out there very quickly and creating like the whole vision behind Leo Finance is like to create like the ultimate Web3, you know, Seeking Alpha, where, you know, instead of going somewhere like Seeking Alpha for like good crypto or investment news, like you can just go to Threads and like in between you engaging with other people on Threads, you're also seeing like really high quality news content that's basically summarized by ChatGPT and posted to Threads. And then, you know, obviously you read the cliff notes, you're like, oh, this is interesting. And then click the article, go to it. And I think what's cool about that is like, I use like Google Alerts a lot to keep up with the crypto industry and, you know, anything else that I'm interested in. And if you've ever used those, you know how they work, but you basically can sign up to get alerted about certain Google trends. And basically you sign up and then it emails you like the top 10 crypto news articles of the day, every single day, depending on how you set it up. But this is kind of like that, but supercharged on Web3 and also using AI with ChatGPT. So I find it like super fascinating that we were able to do that. And all the credit goes to a Nomad Soul. And I think he's working with Hive Trending. And they're working on it together. So super cool project that's like built right on top of Threads. And then I also think it's a cool like use case for Leo Power that if you have 15,000 or more, you can actually use this bot on Discord. So I think that's super cool too. So he was saying it hasn't like officially launched because, you know, it's like we're testing it right now, but I think it's pretty much ready from what I understand. I put a couple articles through there and it's pretty cool, pretty fun to use.
Nice. Speaking of things to use, I know that Zeely campaign is launching in like a week or so, and seems like a pretty easy way to get involved in the 10K USD that is up for grabs.
Yeah, so the Zili campaign, which is formerly Crew3, they changed their name, they just rebranded. But the Zili campaign is going live on in 11 days. So I think it goes live on April 30th. And the new UI goes live on May 1st. So obviously that's not a coincidence. So a Nomad Soul was saying users have to complete like a simple set of quests to join that campaign. And in the campaign, there's $10,000 in value worth of prizes that are up for grabs, basically. So he said to focus on inviting one user per lion and like keep growing it. So like, I think a lot of what the quests have to do with and Zili has to do with in general is like inviting other people to join. It's kind of like this really cool, like layered marketing approach.
Similar to like, you know,
like a referral program.
Well, but not even that, like what a lot of projects did in terms of getting whitelisted. It's like, you know, in order to get whitelisted, you know, follow on Twitter,
exactly,
you know, invite one user, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, except for, you know, that was to get whitelisted to usually like buy into a project. This is basically to quote unquote get whitelisted to win some prizes with USD value.
Yep.
Pretty low bar too. Yes. Back in my newbie days, I would be all over this.
Yeah,
I'm sure I can invite somebody into the Leo universe.
Yeah.
One of my normies.
It's
been a while since I've onboarded a normie.
Yeah, it basically like what you're saying with the whitelisting. It's like taking that, but like automating it all through this Zili application. So that's super cool. And then there's like multiple incentives going on because like there's $10,000 up for grabs. Then there's also all the incentives of like being a Leo holder and, you know, Leo power holder and being active on the platform and building yourself up on the platform and earning more rewards in general and making Leo, you know, the Leoverse expand. So yeah, so definitely join the campaign, try to invite some people that, you know, it goes live in 11 days, but there's already some quests that you can start doing to basically, you know, enroll in the campaign. And it's going to be a huge campaign. And then there's going to be other ones too, but this is like the big one to celebrate the launch of the new UI and push us closer to that 5,000 monthly active users by December goal, which I think we're going to crush because, you know, we hit 1500 already, you know, combining long form and short form. And a Nomad Soul just said that we're on our way to 900 monthly active users on Threads.
That's the overall monthly active users, like in terms of like, you know, like a running average, so to speak, whatever word I'm looking for is. So like we hit 1,000 last month. So like, I guess what I'm trying to understand is, does that mean right now we're below March by 100? So basically we've had a little bit of pullback, so to speak, over the last couple of weeks.
There is a little bit of a pullback.
I mean, which would be fine.
It's a running average.
And then what also, you know, how do you qualify a monthly active user? Because like you have someone like me who I'll openly admit, like I'll thread 3 days in a row. And then like, I won't thread for like 3 days.
Right.
Like I'm pretty like boom bust with my threading.
Yeah. So I just shared this in the Threadstorm and in our Threadcast and in Discord. But this is a chart that shows you the unique Threads users. And it's based on if a user, so a Hive account has posted at least one thread throughout the month. So you've posted one thread, that makes you a monthly active user of Threads.
Makes sense.
And you can see that throughout the month, it's basically like a trailing, because every day you're adding a user, right? Like if a new user comes in today, like on, you know, the 5th, other user comes in on the 7th, you're increasing, right? So throughout the month you increase. And then at the end of the month, you have the final total number for unique monthly active users of Threads.
Each month you're looking at it kind of almost from scratch.
Exactly. Each month you start from zero and then you, you know, obviously then you build up from there. His chart that I just posted shows you that we're trailing behind a little bit by about like 100 monthly active users. So basically showing like a slight decrease in the unique accounts that are on Threads, because you kind of got that core user base. And then you've got the kind of like the float at the top where you don't necessarily know if they're going to thread this month or not. And then growth obviously will be built into that.
The news is we still have 11 days left.
Right. Exactly. So my point was
not threaded, get threading.
Get threading. Yeah. My point was, you know, he was saying we're on pace to get to 900 by the end of the month. And last month we did about like 1,030 or something like that. Basically need to pick it up. If we catch another 100.
So the question is, when do those other 100 people, those 100 users go?
When do we wake them up? But I like seeing the trailing numbers because like every month is going to be different, right? Some months are going to be a lot higher than other months. But seeing the trailing number shows you kind of like, you know, that ebb and flow that's on the daily basis in terms of users. So I think that's kind of interesting to watch and like recalibrate, like, okay, you know, thread counts are a little bit down right now, maybe as a community, you know, because, you know, we all have the incentive of being engaging and increasing, you know, the users in this place. So, you know, maybe as we see those trailing numbers and we're like, okay, they're a little bit lower than last month, maybe, you know, I, as a community member, can step up and try to engage in more threads and post more engaging threads and get people to use it.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, because my assumption is come May 1st, when, you know, the alpha UI becomes the UI, the thread number is going to fucking explode because there's plenty of people that are still on the legacy platform that have not threaded.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of people that are using legacy LeoFinance.io and have not touched threads because, you know, maybe they see the threads icon at the top, but the default homepage still shows long form content on LeoFinance.io. So I definitely think we could see that explode from May 1st. Also with all the onboarding stuff, what I want to see explode is new users signing up through, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Google, email, phone number. What I want to see is new users signing up through the new Leo Infra that'll be live by May 1st and then start threading and added to our monthly active account. So that's what I want to see.
May should be an interesting month for sure. And speaking of things that are interesting and, you know, kind of like growth, we just had LPUD last week and that was another success. And the cat participated this month and locked up a decent chunk of Leo, but I think, what was it? It was the third highest LPUD in terms of amount stake.
Yeah, so third
best in history. 252,000 Leo got powered up. 77% of supply is staked. And apparently June is the 1 year anniversary of LPUD.
Yeah, which is crazy. It's crazy that it's already been a year.
Right, time's flying. Apparently the top 3 months for LPUD are the last 3 months, so basically April, March, and February. So essentially LPUD is running strong, which is cool.
LPUD is absolutely crushing it. I think the May LPUD will be huge too. I'm excited. But yeah, he said so 167 users, which is third highest show up rate for LPUD. And then he also said we're about to reach 100,000 threads since the new UI launched in alpha. So pretty exciting. We want to close out with a couple quick news pieces. Block Trades just came out yesterday and said that they're stopping US operations because of uncertainty with, you know, what's going on, especially with the SEC like cracking down on everybody. I think the SEC has like 55 open lawsuits against various, you know, crypto, mainly crypto exchanges, but just crypto companies in general. So yeah, that's definitely bearish, I think, on the industry. Just all this regulatory uncertainty, like company, what are companies, you know, startups supposed to do if they can't innovate and they're afraid to, the SEC, the government is actively making people afraid to innovate in this industry. And I think that's a huge problem. And, you know, that kind of,
I think they've been doing that in more than crypto over the last couple of decades, but it's just 100%. Really now blatantly obvious with crypto.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I think they're very obvious about it with crypto, but they were a lot more, they were still active, but a lot more discreet about it in terms of, you know, tech in general, but just other industries. Crypto is just a very obvious one. That they're anti-crypto in general. Coinbase came out. So Block Trades came out yesterday. And obviously Block Trades is a relatively small exchange, but we all know them being on Hive. But you know, Coinbase came out and said that they are considering taking all their operations overseas. And obviously Coinbase is like the number one in this industry in terms of, especially in terms of like fiat to crypto, and especially in terms of like American exchange of crypto. I mean, and they're literally a publicly filed company, publicly traded company. So the implications for that are just insane. Like if Coinbase goes overseas, you're going to see like a huge pushback on basically on not just the SEC, but just in general on politicians who are anti-crypto. I think you're going to see a huge pushback and you're already kind of seeing it. If you watched the hearing where Gary Gensler, chairman of the SEC, was being questioned about his, basically about all of his actions, especially towards, you know, being anti-crypto. It was really funny to watch and, you know, very cringy to watch. He was, I mean, if you look at his hand, like one thing that I was reading comments about and then laughing as I saw it is when he's being questioned about things and you look at his hands, he's like shaking, like his whole body is shaking. So he is very rattled. I mean, like physically rattled by everything that's going on. So one thing he was questioned on was, is Ethereum a security? They said, can you just answer yes or no? Is Ethereum a security or is it a commodity? Because the you know, the CFTC is calling Ethereum a commodity. This SEC is calling it a security. But then when he's questioned about it, he said he can't talk to any specific crypto, you know, specifically. So he says, you know, he can only say broad based things about what he believes is a security. He really, I mean, like for 4 minutes, he was basically asked, is Ethereum a security? And he couldn't answer it. So that was pretty bullish for Ethereum, I think, because it's kind of reminiscent of when they deemed that Bitcoin wasn't a security. And I think Ethereum's headed down that path as well. And then when you take a look at like some of the other stuff that he was questioned about, like forgot who it was, but one of the people questioning him was like battering him with questions about, has it been harder for crypto companies to innovate in the United States since you've taken office at the SEC? And he can't answer yes or no, but we all know the answer is yes. I mean, it's pretty factual that there are less crypto companies being created and less crypto companies actively in the United States. They're all going overseas. Even FTX was based out of the Bahamas, but they still had a huge US presence, which is also another question he was asked about, which is how many times did he meet with FTX? And he met with them twice. And, you know, Gary Gensler, like his whole platform that he stands on is that he is out to protect the individual retail investor. Yet he met with FTX twice and was chairman of the SEC during the downfall of FTX. Obviously, he's not doing a good job. And one of the people on the board were saying that they proposed something where they want to remove the chair of the SEC and replace him with a director position. And he also is moving to not allow any previous chairman of the SEC to be that director position. And then he also wants the director to be, you know, answering to a board. So I thought that was really interesting, like basically a full-scale change of the way that things work. So I learned a lot at that hearing just about the general sentiment that there are a lot of politicians that, you know, you can either call them pro-crypto or just not anti-crypto, but there are definitely a lot of politicians out there who are not as big on this whole crackdown thing as other people like Gary Gensler. Like, and I find that really interesting in terms of what it means for the industry, because one of the big questions at the end was, you know, do you think we are driving companies and innovation into the hands of, you know, China and the CCP? And obviously Gary can't answer that, but the answer is yes. Like China came out and said that they're looking to work with crypto and get it integrated with their banks and their banking system. Meanwhile, the United States is basically banning everything and pushing innovation out of the country. And if you see Coinbase leave, that's just going to be, you know, exhibit A of what the US is doing. And, you know, this whole country is built on innovation. So for us to be pushing innovation out of the country is completely counterintuitive to what built everything that's here.
Indeed. But, you know,
that's my rant.
The problem with innovation is less control. And apparently the theme of the last few decades has been more control, more control, more control, which any good politician in history pretty much shared. More government is never the answer and is generally a negative. We need the grips to be loosened of the greedy politicians that are the best stock traders in history also.
Yeah, somehow they happen to be the best traders as well. I'm not sure how they must have done really well in
there must be a politician trading camp school that no one else has access to.
Right.
I have the Discord. I have the recap post up. I will drop it in the chat now. Our Wednesday AMA next week. We will be back to regular scheduled time, Tuesday the 25th. That'll be the last one for April. And we'll be the last one before the launch, which should be exciting because then launch is May 1st and then May 2nd, we have an AMA. So that'll be good. All right, y'all.
Sweet. We'll see you guys next Tuesday.
Indeed. Laters.
Peace.